listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program. And this week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services, is in the hot seat, I think. In fact, I think he's going to be facing Senator Bill Cassidy today, maybe even as we speak, and I can't wait to see how that turns out. But his Make America Healthy Again, or MAHA, as it is called, the agenda of that initiative has been both hailed for its attention to things like nutrition and chemical exposures in foods, and criticized for what some see as its inadequacies in being evidence-based. This week, MedPage Today published a commentary on whether Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s approach to this signature initiative of his is more political marketing than evidence-based health guidance. The commentary was written by Dr. Adam Brown, contributing writer to MedPage Today, and he's also a board-certified emergency medicine and lifestyle medicine physician and founder of ABIG Health that advises healthcare organizations on strategy and innovation. He is past president of emergency medicine at Envision Healthcare and currently a professor of University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill at Kenan Flagler Business School and a visiting professor of business at ESCP Business School in London and Paris. And it sounds, Adam, like you don't have enough to do.
No, Diana, it's so good to talk with you again, but yeah, I'm a little bit busy. I'm actually here today at UNC Chapel Hill, Go Heels, talking about the business of healthcare. So it's exciting to be here, and it's also exciting to talk with you.
Well, great. Thank you for coming back on. I was very intrigued by your piece today, but before we get into your perspectives on it, for listeners who may not be familiar with MAHA, the Make America Healthy Again initiative, give our viewers a little bit of taste of what this is.
Well, I think you teed it up quite well. You know, the focus of MAHA from RFK Jr. was to look at some of the causes of chronic disease and some of the problems associated with the healthcare industry. And so in some respects, you can say, hey, this can be a good thing where the administration is looking at less of disease control and more so at disease prevention. And so that's really the nature of some of the ideas around MAHA or Make America Healthy Again. However, what we are seeing come out of the commission, come out of Health and Human Services and from the secretary is far much more concerning than just saying, let's prevent chronic disease. Some of the things that he has been pushing forward, some of the changes to the vaccine schedule, some of the treatments, I'm going to use air quotes around that he purports to work, are quite concerning as they don't track with evidence. And so he'll use words like gold standard science, or he'll say certain things that on the surface sounds really good. Like, yes, we should be preventing chronic disease, but the solutions to the problems he raised actually are creating a lot more problems.
And I have to say, I was just watching a video of him being interviewed, and I'm blocking who on the congressional committee was interviewing him, but he just wasn't answering the questions, and he was trying to blame Congress for not doing certain things. So there's a lot of a real lack of transparency, I feel, in really how Health and Human Services is operating, how this MAHA agenda is moving forward, and in terms of being accountable for evidence, in terms of what's recommended in this report. What are your thoughts on his approach to advancing this MAHA agenda?
Well, I think you bring up something that is quite interesting there, and it leans into the lack of trust in some of the institutions. And MAHA, in some respects, was born out of a lack of trust around our institutions of public health on the back of COVID. And so there was, for right or wrong reasons, there was a lot of trust or distrust that was sown online and in media and right-wing media and even left-wing media as well on the role of vaccines, the role of public health in making decisions around policies for going back to school or not going to work, restaurant policies, et cetera. And so that created an environment that was quite ripe for someone to come in and say, hey, there's a lot of problems with our current institutions. You can't trust them, so now you can trust me. But to your point around the Senate and some of the questions that have been brought up by members of Congress and by, you know, the public writ large, is that there hasn't been a lot of transparency around how decisions are being made, why decisions are being made, why executive orders are coming out, and what are some of the back office type of activities that are occurring that would make them to push on one initiative over another initiative. And that further creates distrust in the institution. So now you're having, whereas during COVID, there was a lot of distrust coming into Health and Human Services, into public health in general, and even the healthcare industry from the more far right, you're now starting to see it come from not just the left, but even more into the center, into healthcare in general. And so I think it's the first time, Diana, in my time as a doctor, that I am actively saying, I don't know that we can trust what's coming out of the CDC now or what's coming out of HHS. Where does the information come from? Is it truly gold science, or is it one of his influencers that's a buddy of his that's now hawking a new product or service in the background? And I think that has really created a break within the foundations of trust that needs to be there for public health.
Do you think he knows what gold standard science is?
Well, based upon, I don't know what's going on in his brain, but what I can tell you is what he says.
And it's a worm.
I was going to say, like, maybe a worm could tell us more, but I can tell you what we see coming out of his mouth. And a great example of that is around Tylenol and autism, or around vaccines, or the Gardasil vaccine for HPV. I mean, there are multiple things that he will say that has great evidence surrounding it. And when you actually look at the study itself that he's talking about, it's very poor. The evidentiary basis of some of the things that he is saying is absolutely false. But Diana, I wanted to go to something that why I wrote the article.
Yes.
Because I felt that as I'm watching what's happening here with HHS and starting to see some connection points, whether that be his Surgeon General that he chose, that the president chose, that's now stalled, or other type of activities that he tends to promote, follow a lot of patterns with creating networks of influencers. And so as I started seeing the power that many of these people connected into this MAHA movement have from an influencing campaign online or on podcasts or things like that, you start to see that the tactics being used by RFK, and while he may be a true believer in what he is doing and what he is saying, he's leveraging, and the administration is leveraging influencers around the, I'll call, pseudoscience and healthcare adjacent, and even some of the wellness spaces, and engaging the audiences that those influencers have connections with. And those type of engagement activities you can see in coalition building. And so there's a belief that I have that MAHA is really much more of a political action type of activity on the part of the administration to create networks of engagement and to pull in voters and a voting block that had not typically been represented within the Republican or the MAGA type of movement. And so one could be left with the question, is that a good thing or not? Well, the tactic is one that's been used by industry, by marketers, communicators, political activists for a really long period of time. However, you can see that the intention, or it appears that the intention here, is to tap into a voting bloc that was not typically engaged around issues that were often considered pseudoscience, but the 1 or 2 percentage points in some states of engagement really makes a difference. And so whether the administration itself, Trump himself, believes in some of the things that RFK Jr. is saying, or that Republicans believe it, I believe they're using him in this movement as a vehicle to create a coalition around him, and therefore by extension around MAGA.
That's quite well put. And you also call out in your commentary the video, his use of imaging. And before you give the example that you have in the commentary, talk about the direct-to-consumer advertising as sort of an example of how marketing approaches get around really telling you the truth and trying to sell you the image.
So in my class that I teach at UNC and the one that I teach at ESCP in Europe, I show my students clips of pharmaceutical ads that come from the United States. And I say specifically the United States because the United States and New Zealand are the only two countries in the world that do direct-to-consumer advertising around prescription pharmaceutical drugs. And so, of course, there's the students that have this awareness that they see it in the United in my U.S. students at UNC, they see the ads and they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that at dinner. It's not foreign to them. But I show my French and my English students over at ESCP, and they are just aghast at what they are seeing put on television around the direct-to-consumer advertising around pharmaceuticals. Now, we can debate whether that is good, bad, pros, cons, fully bad, fully good. We can have that discussion or debate. But what I try to show the students is the imagery of the direct-to-consumer advertising and the activities and imagery surrounding those are really important. So take a drug that is a cardiac drug or a drug that's an asthma drug. You typically are going to see people in the videos or the advertisements that are doing something that they used to be able to do before they had a disease. So take someone with asthma, severe asthma, and now with this drug, they're able to go to the zoo in a hay-filled type of environment, or they're able to ride in a car with a big fluffy dog full of dander and with a convertible. And so that's not something that people with asthma are able to do, especially uncontrolled asthma. And so, of course, the image is there. It's giving you the hope that if you take this drug, you will be able to get to a place like these people that you're seeing in this commercial. Similarly, there's a commercial around heart failure, and a guy in his 60s, looks to be in his 60s, with his wife or girlfriend. They're all cuddly, you know, and so it's trying to say that, hey, even if you have severe heart failure with this drug, you can now go out and have a wonderful night out with your girlfriend, your wife, which you may not have been done before. So the imagery that's being used by pharmaceutical companies is very intentional to give kind of an aspiration to the affected community. So, of course, if you have asthma or if you have CHF or you have another type of disease and you see a drug commercial that's reminding you of a time gone by when you used to be able to do something, then the drug potentially gives you hope. That creates engagement. That creates resonance with you. And so that's a very intentional, it's regulated, but there's an intentional type of activity around that. And I started seeing some of the similarities with some of Secretary Kennedy's activities.
And before you go on to that, to Kennedy, I just want to point out to listeners that the law in the United States requires that, for example, on television advertisements or radio advertisements, that the drug company has to, when they're advertising a drug, they have to also advise the public of some of the adverse effects. And so you'll hear in a very fast voice that you're probably tuning out because they're talking so fast and at a lower volume, all these horrible side effects. And yet what you're focused on, as you said, Adam, is this this image of somebody who's had asthma and they're jogging and, you know, in spring when the pollen is high. So it is, you know, meeting the requirements, but really selling the imagery to get the message home that this is what you want to do and take. So
exactly.
So tell us now about the video with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Well, it's funny, and that was the video that kind of triggered my mind on this and made me think, okay, then we've seen similar type of activities around direct-to-consumer advertising, and that's the video where he is doing the Rock workout, and he's working with Kid Rock, and he does, like, a video of riding a bicycle in a sauna. He's wearing jeans and shirtless, and it just, to be frank, I'm an avid exercise person. I go to the gym every single day or exercise every day. I've yet to see someone doing an exercise bike in jeans and a sauna. But and so I've actually had someone respond to this my op-ed and say, that's AI generated. No, it wasn't. It wasn't AI generated, at least from what I can tell and from some of the news commentary surrounding it. But it triggered a few thoughts in my brain. And that was one is, okay, so who is he advertising to? Mm. And what is the medium by which he is leveraging to connect with a certain community? So one is the connection with Kid Rock. And many who have watched the politics of the last few, the last decade, Kid Rock has been very much engaged in the Trump type of coalition and MAGA, et cetera. And though, and Kid Rock is not a spring chicken, so let's just say, so he's not as much for a younger generation, he's doing a little bit older. And so if you take into consideration that, number one, the platform that he was doing some of these activities on was Kid Rock, Kid Rock's YouTube channel, that is tapping into a very specific segment of the population right there. So you know immediately that him being brought on to that channel, doing activities through that channel, that he is tapping into the people that listen to Kid Rock. So that's an influencer connection right there. But then secondly, if you look at the imagery around Kennedy, so, you know, he is looks relatively healthy. He's tanned. He's doing activities. He's got a physique that many people of multiple ages and backgrounds would say, hey, I would love to have a physique that's like that. Now, just as an aside, Diana, as an ER doctor, lifestyle medicine doctor, I can't recommend sauna sessions, doing a heavy exercise, especially if you are in your 70s. Please talk with your doctor before taking on any strenuous type of exercise activity because, you know, cardiac strain, heat stress, they are real things. But that's beside the point of this this marketing. The bigger point here is that he's clearly tapping into the aspirations of people either with chronic disease and saying, hey, if you believe the things that I'm believing in, if you pick up the banner, if you start to take it to pharmaceutical companies and focus on preventive care, you could, if you don't have the disease yet, you could stay looking like this. If you do have the disease and you treat yourself differently, you could look like me. And the age demographic is important. The engagement with certain influential groups is important here. And, of course, the imagery is important. I mean, listen, Diana, you and I are still talking about it. So it clearly had an effect of searing into our mind, either nightmarishly or otherwise, the imagery of that. And we're still talking about it. Yeah. So there's a real intention here.
So Adam, you know, I have conversations all the time with people, not just in this community, but across the country. And, you know, around the fact that our healthcare system is failing, that our healthcare system, obviously some of it is the shortages, but also the workforce shortages. But it's also since COVID, it seems like a healthcare system that is not able to respond to what individuals need and want in terms of healthcare. And that there are a number of lapses that the healthcare system has, and people feel those, whether it's not being able to get a visit, to having a wrong diagnosis in the emergency room or from a primary care provider. And so there's this sense that our healthcare system is not able to promote our health. Mm. And so this wellness movement, which I embrace the idea of we all should be paying attention to how we can live healthier lives.
Agreed.
And the healthcare system has not been very helpful with that in the past. So it's almost that people have turned to other sources of information. They've turned to what their friends have told them about how they lost weight or how they got fit or what have you. So is there not a benefit to MAHA having a focus on how to think and live healthy lives?
Oh, yes. I do believe that is a good emphasis. Again, it's highlighting the right problem. And there's a couple of things that you mentioned there. I want to pick through a couple of them. The first one is that demand for wellness-oriented system, I believe is entirely legitimate, because the disease management model of care simply is not working that well. And I say it's not working, and I again want to be careful to say that it's not black and white. I mean, we just saw released how an mRNA vaccine was able to keep people with pancreatic cancer alive much, much, much longer than they were ever expected to be alive, a very, very deadly disease. So there are things that we are doing within the disease management model that are working. But when we think about things that are not working on a micro and macro level, we still have one of the highest maternal and infant mortality rates in the Western Hemisphere. We still have a high disease burden of preventable disease and hospitalizations, much higher than other comparative countries. We spend almost twice what other countries spend, and we our life expectancy and our outcomes are far worse on many things. That said, the system has failed us in some ways. We do have shortages. We have disparities in access. We have insurance collapses in some areas, or cuts in certain to the healthcare system. And so that frustration and skepticism is appropriate. And that scrutiny is very, very important on the part of end users, whether that be clinicians or whether that be patients. So I think MAHA has, in some ways, is good by having a focus on wellness. But here's the problem. It's drowned out by a lot of the other not evidence-based scientific type of, not scientific-based type of recommendations that they are making, whether it be the vaccine schedule, et cetera. And one of the best medical miracles of the last century and this century have been vaccines and the mRNA vaccine. And yet, despite billions of doses of the mRNA vaccine to attack COVID or prevent COVID or any of the other vaccines for other diseases, that's one of the cheapest, best ways to prevent some of these horrible diseases that can take place. And so when you have the person that's spouting, you need to be well, you should do wellness activities, follow these different individuals, use these peptides, do these different things, avoid these dyes, while at the same time saying something that's so demonstrably false, it ends up drowning out some of the better messages that could be made around prevention, which I totally believe that we should be doing.
And I do want to add, just this morning, I read two other pieces around that give rise to really people being quite skeptical about what RFK Jr. is doing, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Secretary of Health and Human Services, is doing, and the MAHA agenda. And one had to do with this push on peptides. And it was the newsletter of your local epidemiologist, who you probably know about. She does a really good job of talking about different issues, started out during COVID to do this, but now she talks about a variety of topics and the evidence, and is quite good. And this one was on peptides and looking at the evidence that supports or does not support the use of peptides in humans, showing that, you know, in some cases it's all been based on rat models, and we know that rats metabolize things very differently, et cetera. And so RFK Jr. is proposing to speed up FDA approval of some of these peptides that don't have enough evidence behind them, and that's concerning, which is why I asked earlier on about what you thought he thought the gold standard for science was. The other one had to do with the ultra-processed foods, and that one of the things that we know that he's doing is promoting eating more meat and beef, and with the ultra-processed, that's not ultra-processed, but with the ultra-processed foods, that companies are now looking to adopt things that he's saying we should do, such as swapping out fructose based sugar to cane sugar, which and so these companies are looking to just swap out a few ingredients or add a couple other ingredients into ultra processed foods rather than eating fresh foods. So it's there's real deep concerns here about what's legitimate and what isn't, and I think it brings up what you talk about in your article, that is perpetuating distrust in science and distrust in government. Very quickly, because we're almost out of time, any thoughts about how we deal with that?
Yeah, well, I think from the healthcare perspective, we also have to think like a disinformant and also like a marketer and communicator. Mm-hmm. And there has to be a strategy. We on the side that has been following science, that are scientists, that are clinicians, doctors, public health officials, we have to understand what the needs are of the public, where they get their information, who influences them. And then when we have certain diseases that we want to prevent or wellness things that we want to promote, we have to use similar type of methods and channels that people that are pushing out disinformation, misinformation, or good information are using. And so that's what I would say. We've got to invest in that coalition building and also invest in that strategic marketing and communications around healthcare more than we've done in the past, and take a little bit out of their own playbook to reverse the tide of dis and misinformation.
And that's Dr. Adam Brown, a contributing writer to MedPage Today and a board-certified emergency medicine and lifestyle medicine physician. He wrote a piece, a commentary for MedPage Today on April 15th called Robert F. Influencer Jr. is Selling Politics, Not Health. Adam Brown, thank you so much for coming back on to Health Center in the Catskills today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great rest of your week.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, very interesting, and I recommend the article. It's quite well done, and I do appreciate him coming back on, and we're out of time. You've been listening to Health Center in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, and you're listening to us on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains.